say that I need to be saved. Say with me, the devil got his way. I want to know how when you are praying, or when you are doomsdaying, how you think you know that someone is listening to what you are saying. So you think that you can tell us how to live our life, never questioning.
You know, if I could open every show up that way, I'd probably feel a little better about it.
It's a fantastic song.
It really is. This is
Shelley Siegel is awesome.
Yes. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. My name is Sam. With me today, for the first time in a long while, in really too long.
It's been too long.
Is Rich and Deanna Joy Lyons. How are you guys?
We are fantastic.
Great. It's great to be here.
So if you liked the opening music this week, and I would be surprised if you didn't, you can actually hear this artist live next week at Anthem Coffee at NT at 911 Pacific Avenue in Tacoma. It's instead of a post show on Sunday, we'll be doing this concert at 5 p.m. It's $5 at the door. Shelley Siegel is working her way across the country, and so all of the proceeds go to her and her tour of the country. Do come out. It should be a fun time. She's really fantastic live. I saw her in Kennewick last year, and it's really fantastic.
Yeah, we've seen her a couple of times. She was at the Reason Rally and the American Atheist Convention last year. She was at the American Atheist Convention this year, last weekend in Austin. And she's just a wonderful, snuggly, awesome person.
Well, we hosted an event with her last year.
Yes, we did.
And, yeah. Just a fabulous person. And like I said, live, she is incredible. She's, great on the CDs, great in the studio, but she really brings something live that's just awesome. So
absolutely.
I'm looking forward, yeah.
And it was because we actually went out for a couple drinks afterwards, and Becky and Shelley actually really bonded over some stuff. It was a really fun time. Do come out. It'll be a lot of fun. Be a lot of atheists there. A lot of folks coming up from Seattle. It should be great. So you mentioned the Ask an Atheist, or no, not the Ask. That's where we are.
That's, hello. That's us. Yes.
There's a lot of A's in the atheism movement, as
there
you might
are.
Imagine. The American Atheists Convention in Austin this past week. You guys were there.
Yeah, we were so lucky to be able to go to this. It was so much fun. We saw a bunch of incredible talks. We got to go see the Bat Bridge. The bats come swarming out. It's the largest urban bat colony in, I think, the world. And it's just millions of them under the Congress Street Bridge right over the lake. What is it called?
Ladybird Lake.
Yep.
Okay, this is my attempting not to be terrified face.
Oh, I know. Well, we had some friends who rented a little bitty boat, and you can rent this little boat, holds about 8 to 10 people, and then drive it up and down the river. Very reasonable. And we drove right up under the bridge when the bats were swarming out. It's dusk, beautiful sunsets. It was very cool. And the weather held out. It was about anywhere from 65 to like 85. And kind of muggy. It was a lovely, lovely trip.
So Austin is the home of our friends at the Atheist Experience. Did you get to hang out with them at all?
Yeah. I was really happy we got to have a beer with Russell Glasser out on the deck. Nice. We got to hang out with Matt Dillahunty and Beth Presswood and have beers and sit and talk, and even got to go to their house and play Cards Against Humanity. And, you know, those of us that are nerds will know how bad, good, bad Cards Against Humanity is.
Bad, good, bad.
Yes.
Bad,
and,
good. Okay.
You know, with a bunch of heathens, it's even more fun.
Right on. So, Teresa McBain was there and won Atheist of the Year this year.
Atheist of the Year. And when you think about this year, you know, a year ago she came out.
I mean,
she has spent it came out at the American Atheist Convention last year. So, you know, this was kind of her 1-year anniversary of when she came out, you know, from literally left the pulpit and the next Sunday says, I'm an atheist.
Yeah.
So her story, I mean, of course, it's anyone who wants to hear it, it's out there, but I mean, it's a fabulous story. And I had a real good chance to connect with her personally again. I mean, she stayed when she came through Seattle and spoke. She stayed with us. So, and of course, my background in the ministry, we kind of bonded a bit. And she's doing remarkably well.
Yeah.
I mean, really holding her own. She has experienced a lot of the blowback that you get.
Right.
And you do what you have to. You address it head on, and you take time for yourself and retreat and you know, focus on your own health and things. She's doing absolutely fabulous. And now with the Humanists of Florida,
she's the executive
director now.
Yep, she spent time as the PR director for the American Atheists in New Jersey, and that was a cool opportunity. From what I could tell, she did a really great job with them, but the Humanists of Florida put her closer to home, and you know, that's always best to be
community. She's had a fairly whirlwind career since
she came out of the Reason Rally. Lots of speaking, lots of touring, just absolutely insanely cool.
I really like what she's done. Her blog is excellent. She's really become a very outspoken activist in the preceding year. I can't think of anybody who, you know, more deserving of the award in 2012. We hope to talk to her soon. So what else did you guys encounter at the atheist Fandango in Austin?
You know, I just really enjoyed the fact that the community itself is, especially the Austin community, it's just a very mature, very solid atheist community there. And of course, the American Atheist Convention, we spend a lot of time socializing and just, you know, visiting folks we know and folks we haven't met, you know. We have so many Facebook friends that are people we haven't really put faces to and met in person.
Yeah.
Had a really good opportunity to do a lot of that. But it seems so much of the convention itself was centered around the idea of community. I think as a movement, we're getting the idea that we can't just say, our truth is better than your truth. Religions have done that for years.
Yes.
We've got to have a community that people can come out into. And until we have that community, people are not going to feel comfortable coming out, and we're not going to have a lot of the benefit that we can have through building community.
I mean, I guess it's a little difficult to do. This is something that's really important to me, is I think we need, you know, it's what we call the Atheism Visibility Movement. It's more than just being atheists. It's we're trying to build this new community. And it's kind of difficult. It feels a little difficult to me for me to do it from behind a microphone on the air. So going out and meeting people seems like an important part of it. I mean, I've made a lot of Facebook friends in the preceding 3 years, but I haven't met a lot of them yet. And it seems like conventions are a great opportunity to do that. And I hope to go some year, but I feel like I'm up in the corner of the country. It's hard. Yeah, it's a little difficult to get out of the Seattle area sometimes.
Yeah, but don't discount what you do behind the microphone, because you know, in reach of all of our voices, thanks to the internet, thanks to radio, thanks to all of the people that are speaking out in multiple ways.
Yeah,
you feel like even if you just see somebody post something about atheism on Facebook, you go, I'm not alone. There are other people. And we met a lot of people in Austin that traveled to the American Atheist Convention that, you know, they're from somewhere in the Bible Belt,
right,
where they don't have a whole lot of people that they can even be honest about their atheism to. So just spending a little time in any way letting other people know they're not alone, not a bad thing. And there was one talk that I wanted to mention. Rebecca Hensler did a talk about grief beyond belief, which is they have a closed Facebook group, and they also have an open Facebook-like page for grief beyond belief. And it's grief support for people who don't have supernatural beliefs. And she gave a very moving talk about how when she lost her son, all she found on the online support group communities, it's constant. I'm praying for you.
Yeah.
Your son is with God now. It's part of his plan. He's an angel looking down from heaven. That's painful to hear, you know?
And that's one of the places in life where religion has really grabbed on and held on to, amongst people who aren't actually particularly religious, is when somebody dies, it's suddenly safe tempted to just assume that everybody around you has some sort of religious belief, as long as it's ecumenical enough that everybody goes to heaven.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I don't think very many people, although I have seen this online, they will say, you know, God took away your child to punish you or to get your attention for your apostasy. And that is horrible.
You do see that online.
Yeah, but even the benign stuff is kind of painful. It's like, no, I don't believe I'm going to be reunited with my loved ones, so I need to deal with death in a way with my community and with support of people that know where I'm at without false notions of seeming comfort.
Grieving is one of the most common emails we get. We talked about one last week where I said, you know, if somebody asks me to pray for someone and they're going through something really terrible, somebody in hospice care, somebody dying, I'll tell a little white lie and say okay, you know. Yeah. But grieving is one of those things that we get a lot, and I'm never really sure how to answer. So what is that Facebook group again?
It's called Grief Beyond Belief, and there's a closed group, which is private, so people who don't want to be honest or open with their atheism because of, you know, they have social concerns, they can join that group. Or Grief Beyond Belief is a like page that, you know, can be visible to other people. So everybody just tells their stories, they share with each other, they share, you know, how they get through their grief, and, you know, it really deals with it in a reality-based way, which is, I think, very important.
I think so, too. Mm-hmm. So we have some other announcements here. I do want to congratulate Casey and Cameron, Ask an Atheist alumni. They are the proud parents of Elliot. Congratulations.
Hey, awesome. Congratulations, Casey. Enjoy being a dad.
Yeah, I think he'll do great. I think they'll both do great. They're really good people. And I've already seen pictures on the Friends Facebook feed of Elliot dressed up as a Klingon. he is of the Star Trek bent. And that brings me to another thing. If you go to askanatheist.tv right now, and not only do we have the radio show, but we also write articles. And these days I've been writing one roughly once a week. We went into the Hugo Chavez thing a little bit more. We're discussing the response to the 2013 listener, you know, winter listener survey. And right now, one of the things that we're talking about is the place of geek media inside of the context of Ask an Atheist. Sometimes we get some email where people are really positive about it, but occasionally we get some email where somebody says, you know, when you talk about the geek stuff, when, you know, last week you guys mentioned Superman, sometimes we talk about wrestling, sometimes we make references, it detracts from the show, it removes credit from you guys. And that's a discussion that I really want to have publicly, that I want to hear from people and sort of get a direction and see what people think. So if you go to askanatheist.tv and you can see that blog, so to get that conversation started, what do you guys think?
I think it has to be, you know, to make a reference to media, it has to be well enough known that, and in my day job, that's one of the things when we pick things that we're going to use, we bat around the newsroom. Does everybody know this? Does everybody get the reference right off?
Yeah.
The people that, you know, if just about everybody gets it, okay, we may go with that. If a couple of people don't really get the reference or don't know the background of it, we kill it. Yeah. And you have to be audience aware on that. And it's hard to get stuff like that that really hits.
Right.
You know, and atheism is kind of a broad thing. We're not really looking at a demographic per se.
Right.
You know, I have a demographic I'm targeting. I know that if I'm going to pull a tune that has a lyric that works with a song, I know the years I want to pull it from because I know the age group that I'm shooting for. In atheism, you don't have that age group.
No.
There's so much that you don't have, and it's such a diverse, using pop culture, you know, media references, it's difficult because the only way they work is if people get them, and if people don't get them, it does detract.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Although I would say that I think as a general demographic issue, atheists tend to have a pretty heavy geek bent.
I agree.
So you can probably get away with a little more than, say, on like standard radio. But, you know, it might have to be something like, for instance, Doctor Who. I'd say probably a vast majority of atheists are into or know stuff about Doctor Who.
Even before the new series, there were parts of the Doctor Who sort of mythology that were well known. The police box TARDIS, you know, the Fourth Doctor's incredibly long scarf, stuff like that was well known. Last week, I talked about, I said something about All-Star Superman. He looked like Benny Hinn. And that's one of the other sides of it, is when we have these conversations, sometimes it's really just off the cuff. Just something occurs to me, and we were talking about televangelists, and it suddenly occurred to me, wait, that outfit of that comic book that Mike had me read, it reminded me of Benny Hinn and the way he dresses, and that comes up too. So, I mean, we do try to aim for stuff that's going to be widely understood, but I will admit sometimes things just occur and we just talk about them on the show.
And that's fine. That's being who you are, and you can't hide your personality. That's, in fact, the number one thing I would say is be you. So if geek references are part of you, be geek referencing.
Right on. I look forward to hearing about this online. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. In a moment, we're going to talk to CFI Canada and about the Office of Religious Freedom, sort of a thing that's happening. So what does everybody want to play?
Something new?
Something with guns. Lots of guns.
Something that supports playing other than combat, you knob.
Jerk face.
All right, how about Dead Stars from Dame and I Publishing? It's a sci-fi game that uses the universal decay rules. This system has an emphasis on social and technical skills, yet allows technical characters to make thousands of different weapons.
Hey, psionics.
Oh yeah, I'm going to be a bug with big freaking guns.
Shape-shifting tech head for me.
Check out DameandI.net for the sci-fi horror game Dead Stars, or to get involved in the community forums. Dead Stars, now available on Amazon.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Or rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's best source of atheist videos. Visit atheismtv.com.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide a bajillion dollars in your locker.
Wow, a bajillion dollars?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. The Office of Religious Freedom was the result of an election promise by Prime Minister Stephen Harper in Canada. It's seen as a sop to the religious right, a group widely seen as key to his election. So it should be no surprise that a closed-door meeting about the ORF was overwhelmingly attended by Christians. Oddly enough, the ORF is modeled off the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, formed in 1998. The U.S. Commission has been no stranger to controversy, being seen as largely ineffective in favoring a Christian agenda. The commission's media high point was firing a Muslim staffer in 2012. So in this context, John Baird, the Canadian Foreign Affairs Minister and nominal boss of the ORF, is on the record saying that the freedom of non-belief is not a priority. He says, "We don't see agnosticism or atheism as being in need of defense in the same way persecuted religious minorities are." Prime Minister Harper has said that freedom of non-belief will be a part of the ORF, but questions remain. Stepping in for atheists and freethinkers is CFI Canada, a branch of the transnational organization Center for Inquiry. It is focused on advancing scientific literacy, humanist values, and critical thinking through education. I've got a lot of their stickers on one of my laptops. Joining us to talk about the Office of Religious Freedom is Michael Payton, director of CFI Canada. His background is in philosophy and cognitive science. Awesome. And he joins us today from Toronto. How are you, Michael?
Very good, thank you. It's a pleasure to be on the program.
So, what did I miss in my introduction? This is clearly a complex topic, and it's a summary, but there's probably key points that I've missed. So,
I was quite impressed by the thoroughness of the introduction. I think the only thing I would mention that's really important is that in Canada there is a very different political atmosphere, and one of the things I think many Canadians worry about is about becoming more conservative, more like the United States. And basically the Harper government, the conservative government, is a very U.S. style, like almost like the Republican Party sort of agency, that they do tend to make statements that are anti-science, or they tend to also deregulate certain scientific areas of policy. And that's well known in Canadian policy as well, in Canadian politics. And that they are, like Harper himself, is an evangelical Christian. So there is that sort of fear that actually we're going to basically be instituting a branch of the Republican Party and a branch of like the evangelical right-wing movement into Canada. And that was actually a huge motivation for us to start, once we saw the Office of Religious Freedom coming in, that we wanted to push them as early as possible. Like, think about what if you were in the United States in 1998 when their department was just starting off? What would you do to make sure that the language and the policy that was being set and the agenda that was being set actually did acknowledge atheists and non-believers? So that was a huge motivation for us right at the very beginning.
So, I mean, we can talk about the Office of Religious Freedom being part of the Canadian government, but, I mean, or, you know, groups are made out of people. Who is the ORF?
Well, that's actually a very interesting question, and one that a lot of reporters and media people didn't bother to really ask. The ORF is within the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, but we didn't know anything about it until it was announced roughly a month ago. At that point, when the office was announced, the only person we knew anything about was Ambassador Bennett. Now, Andrew Bennett was the ambassador that I spoke to on Thursday when we had our first consultation with the ORF. I think he's a nice guy and everything. But at the same time, there are open questions about, like, his past. He was a professor of theology at a Christian, very conservative Christian evangelical university, one of the few that exists in Canada. So a lot of questions have been asked before about what exactly qualifies him to be an ambassador. He doesn't have like the legal or political background that one might expect from someone who's essentially being a diplomat. The background he does have is a thorough knowledge of Christianity and Christian beliefs, and that seems to be his only real relationship into religion.
So how does this office compare with other governmental projects?
Well, it depends on what government project that we're comparing it to. Mm-hmm. A big part of their budget and a lot of their mandate is actually to help funding, help fund educational initiatives, and to help advise the rest of the other departments within the Canadian government. So, for instance, one area that we were speaking about was that there are countries that, for us as CFI Canada, that we're very concerned about. For instance, like blasphemy laws that exist in Bangladesh or Pakistan or Indonesia or like all sorts of places. There are actually bilateral trade agreements that exist between Canada and these countries. So the Office of Religious Freedom can advise and actually petition on behalf of a religious group to say that when those bilateral trade agreements are being made, that there already stand some human rights considerations that are put in there. One of them that can be now added would be a human rights concern about blasphemy laws, because those directly and very forcefully impact non-religious groups within those countries. We've seen just over the last week Bangladeshi atheist bloggers being arrested, and harder and harder and louder calls to try to have them executed.
So has the, I know it's really early days for the organization, but has the Office of Religious Freedom actually spoken about Bangladesh or any other blasphemy law problems around the world yet?
They have issued a few statements. Our big agenda item this week and moving on into the future is that they should be making statements to other countries, about the rights of non-believers, or the problems of failing that, or the problems with the strict blasphemy laws, among other things. But we were very lucky. We had the Center for Inquiry Office of Public Policy supporting us from Washington, D.C. They had been in consultation with the U.S. government many times, and basically had done a lot of this work before. And they were also very helpful because they saw the advantage to starting the conversation as early as possible and starting that dialogue, because there really is an opportunity here to help save the people who are in desperate need of protection internationally for selling free thought literature or blogging or doing radio programs like the one we're doing now.
Right. So I know you guys had a meeting with the ORF this past Thursday, but I'd like to go back a little farther and ask about sort of how the CFI found out about the ORF and if you guys had an initial stance. What was the early history of the ORF and the CFI like?
Well, it's I think at the earliest stages we were incredibly skeptical. And
I can imagine.
Yeah, it did look like basically an office that was going to help essentially just promote Christianity. And even you quoted John Baird as saying that they didn't view the rights of atheists and agnostics as being nearly as important. There were other statements to that effect as well. We saw also that at the same time as Harper was creating the Office of Religious Freedom, he was closing down the Office of Human Rights and the Center for the Status of Women. Like, these were also moves that we're seeing as being simultaneous to the opening of this office. So that was also a huge concern of ours, that, like, essentially we were seeing women's rights and human rights being, like, decimated in terms of their funding and their status. And then suddenly they have this new Office of Religious Freedom in order to sort of replace it, which seemed to be just a farming house for saying that Christians are the most oppressed people on the planet, which is laughable. so, like, our early stance was just that we were concerned that this was just a very tricky political move to advance Christianity.
This is a bit of a surprise to me. I mean, we're looking at each other just mouths agape. Like, they got rid of these other offices about human rights and gender equality and replaced it with an Office of Religious Freedom. If I saw that in the United States, there would, I just hearing those phrases, I can already tell the kind of people who would be behind it. And this is shocking to me. This is a big surprise, especially when you know, you have Stephen Harper actually saying positive things about the place of atheists and non-believers in the Canadian context. I mean, here, you know, in the U.S., Obama has mentioned non-believers once in 2009, and people were dancing in the streets. But to have this compared with the other thing, I find that very shocking.
Well, that's been too political. Like, there are some people, like, even in our community, that are, like, more conservative than others.
Right.
But I think would be a very accurate statement is to say that Harper is an incredibly strategic politician. And what often concerns people like me is that he is very good at making these kinds of decisions and having no one know about them. There's been a number of issues in Canada, actually, like, it's kind of a stereotype of Canada in the United States, I find, when I go down there, that, you know, they believe Canada is sort of like a socialist, very liberal area. And it is, in comparison to a lot of places in the U.S. But that's really started to change recently, that there really is this move to try to buy certain elements in the country to make it less so, that we have our own religious right, and they are powerful, and they are well-funded, and they know all the right people, and they're doing strategically exactly the same things that they're doing in the U.S. And the problem is that no one takes it nearly as seriously because there still exists this stereotype that, oh, well, Canada's always going to be like our our little Sweden to the north. and like, again, that's really done a lot of damage because no one's really paying attention to what the decisions are actually being made. And also that they're very good about saying when they're caught with their hand in the cookie jar, which is essentially what we did with Harper. It was, we were not invited to this first opening while there were like 80 delegates of the Evangelical Christian Union in attendance, and there were, it was held at a mosque, the opening of the Office of Religious Freedom. Like, you would never imagine that happening in the U.S., but that's exactly what happened in Canada. And when we expressed outrage, the media picked it up. And so it was the media that really pushed Harper to say, like, what are you going to do about atheists? What are you going to do about non-religious people? But yeah, if the media wasn't there, if the media hadn't listened to us, then there's no way we would have gotten a consultation.
I can actually sort of imagine that happening in the U.S.
Yeah, you know, I've actually read, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, you probably know more about this than I do, Michael, but they, the word is that a lot of the bigwigs and the strategists for the religious right in the U.S. have done some consultation and some, you know, sort of helping out their brethren in Canada, trying to help bring about some of the same policies and some of the same conservative things. And, you know, I can see that with this Office of Religious Freedom. It does seem like a strategy that appears very reasonable, but actually is giving favoritism to a certain brand of religion.
Oh, certainly. And it goes beyond that, actually. There's we've been working on the Ugandan Kill the Gays bill. That's been something that we've worked on in CFI Canada internationally as well.
Thank you.
And part of the motivation for doing that was also us noticing that a lot of the same names were popping up in Canada. Like that there were, there's a bishop, for instance, from Uganda that spoke, did like a speaking tour in Canada. And he is responsible for drafting part of that Ugandan Ugandan legislation. So, like, again, it's this feeling that a lot of people have that, oh, it could never happen in Canada. And it absolutely does. And it's all the same people that have been involved in the United States and internationally with promoting the religious right. So it's an uphill battle, certainly for us, to combating such a well-oiled, well-funded machine that has done this in so many other countries. And we're just making a stand to make sure it doesn't happen here.
You know, I may be ignorant on this, is separation of church and state, I think it's different in Canada than it is here in the U.S. Is that correct?
Yeah, we have no establishment clause. In fact, like our constitution, and we have kind of a different constitutional history. We, for instance, have the mention of God in the preamble to the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which was only instituted in 1982, and that is similar to what your Bill of Rights is. And like our constitution, that actually is really the melding of three different groups that existed in Canada in the 1800s, which were French Canadians and Catholics, British Canadians, which were Protestants, and Native peoples. So there is, in a way, actually a lot of protection of religion built right into the Constitution and built right into our legal history as well. That's why we have things like publicly funded Catholic schools in Ontario. Why we have the mention of God in the preamble to the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And it's very difficult for us to combat church-state violations because we're merely, really only going after it as a political principle rather than a constitutional, you know, statement that has legal and backing and is well-grounded in jurisprudence.
So in this context, the CFI was putting pressure on the Office of Religious Freedom to have a discussion with them, and you actually succeeded. You had a conversation this Thursday. How did it go?
Well, actually, it was quite relieving, to be honest, because we were one of the first groups. I think we were the first or the second religious group that the office officially consulted with. So we are very happy with that. And the first thing that they did when bringing us in, Ambassador Bennett said, you know, he basically started by just apologizing for not including us right from the beginning. And then proceeded to state that, yes, there has been some criticism of this office, but make no mistake that we're here to protect all people's beliefs. And so, like, myself and the other members of CFI Canada will, of course, be ensuring that they follow up on that. But I would say that, like, right off the bat, we I think, cleared the air a bit. And I do think that there is genuine chances here. And they only exist now because we pushed so hard and so directly. And it was many of our members even took the time, like great people, they even took the time to personally write the foreign minister, the prime minister, and the new ambassador, write them personally and say, it's important that you meet with CFI Canada and you have these consultations. So because of that pressure, I think they're now in a position where, like, they have to talk to us. And when they did, they said, we're going to make every effort to protect atheists internationally as well.
I have to admit to being something of politically weird about stuff like this. I don't quite believe politicians when they make changes like these. It doesn't look like the pressure has brought any changes to the structure of the Office of Religious Freedom. I guess I'm a political skeptic this way. Did you get a sense that this is sort of a sea change for the Office of Religious Freedom and they're going to do things differently now? Or was this just, we got pressure, so now it's window dressing?
Well, I think what we'll really have to be doing is just watching to see. I could tell you how I feel about it, but that wouldn't be, you know, very accurate, and I don't think it would allay anyone's skepticism either, right? Like, what we did do is that we had conversations about particular areas that were of concern to CFI in Canada and CFI internationally as well, and then we had a few things that we had a list of basically three things that they could do very easily, that would be a good demonstration of their commitment towards non-religious communities. So that included things like refraining from using the word faith group in talking about religious or non-religious groups generally. Another would be issuing a press release on the Bangladeshi atheists. The third would be developing regular calendars for consultation with CFI so that we were meeting every 4 to 6 months or so to update and continue the conversation based on new cases that arose and following up with them on cases that they had taken a lead on. There also exists possibilities for helping us to address other things. A big one on our list, of course, is refugee claimants, because they're even in Toronto, not too far physically from me right now. Refugee claimants that leave places like Indonesia and Pakistan and Bangladesh because they're persecuted for being atheists. And right now, under Canadian law, that's actually not considered grounds by statement to the letter. That is not considered grounds for being a refugee from these countries. Like, it had to be a political reason.
Yeah.
So, like, that's something that, like, very concretely, they can help us talk to foreign affairs and refugee claimants to ensure that, yes, atheists who leave Bangladesh because they're afraid they're going to be killed should have refugee status.
So, how can, at this point, given that you've been named a strategic partner and it looks like there's a chance for a change here, what can our non-Canadian listeners do to help?
Well, I think the big one is we were only able to do this because we had so much support from CFI Transnational, like CFI USA. And they have a lot more resources than us up in Canada, because the populations are different, but it was really the Office of Public Policy. It was CFI's office in the U.S. that allowed that to happen. And I'd say, like, just continue to support your local humanist organizations, your local CFI. And a lot of these groups that actually are putting pressure on governments and getting them to make these sorts of statements. Like, I think one of the difficult things for me as a leader in the free thought movement is just that it is difficult to effectively get things done because there's so few people who are atheists to begin with. Secondly, are out atheists. And then thirdly, are committed, dedicated to organizations and helping organizations do their work. But it's only that last third group of people that really get these types of things done. Like, we were dancing in the streets just, as you mentioned, when Harper said, when our prime minister said that atheists deserve protection. We were, like, that celebrating.
Yeah, that's a big one.
That's a major step, yeah.
And that's just to say, like, that's, I think, the most forthright statement from a world leader in history about the rights of non-religious people. So supporting these groups that make that happen is very important.
I think so. So thank you for your time today, Michael. If people want to follow the further progress of the Office of Religious Freedom, where would they go online to find you?
They can go on Facebook. We're CFI Canada Facebook page. They can also, we're on Twitter at CFI Canada. And those would be the easiest, most direct places to find us. And we update whenever we take on a new project, any of our branches take on projects. It's a great way to see what we're up to.
Michael Payton is the director of Center for Inquiry Canada. Thank you very much for your time today. Look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you very much.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And maybe do some news when we come back in a moment.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide a bajillion dollars in your locker.
Wow, a bajillion dollars?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, and now we're going to discuss some news. And I don't really have a lot to say about this one. Maybe you guys do, but we got to talk about it. And this is North Carolina. Their legislators are hitting, like, weird levels of crazy over there. Lawmakers in North Carolina have filed a resolution that would establish a state religion in North Carolina. Seriously, what else do I have to say?
Whoa.
Yeah. In a federal lawsuit filed last month, the ACLU says the Rowan County Board of Education opened 97% of its meetings since 2007 with explicitly Christian prayers. In a 2011 ruling against the Forsyth Community Board of Commissioners, the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals did not ban prayer at government meetings, which is a problem, I think.
Yes.
But said that prayers favoring one religion over another are unconstitutional. As a result, we have House Joint Resolution 494, the Rowan County Defense of Religion Act of 2013, which cites a discredited nullification interpretation of the 10th Amendment, interpreting the amendment to mean that state laws can override federal laws and does not prohibit states or their subsidiaries from making laws respecting an establishment of religion according to the bill. So the major question to me is, if you're going to establish a state religion, which one?
Of course, you know, most people will think of, you know, Christianity as some kind of, you know, kind of in general, it's all the same.
Yeah.
But as we atheists know probably better than most Americans, there are a bazillion different flavors of Christianity.
Yeah.
So even if you just narrow it down to, say, Bible-based Christianity, which you hear a lot, there's a lot of people who claim Bible-based Christianity, you have a lot of different beliefs.
There, this will result in religious uprisings. Just the end. This is the only direction this way goes. Because if you stop being secular, you become sectarian, which means a sect.
And I think that it's just absurd to think that you've got the First Amendment. I mean, we have the Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
And we have that has been challenged in court. It's been heard. This is absurd. There is the First Amendment. I mean, the very principle of the First Amendment is violated in this. And it's not going to go anywhere. And they know that. And that's, to me, what I find more disturbing than anything is here you've got legislators who know the law.
Yeah.
They know this can't go anywhere.
I question whether or not they know the law, because
okay.
a lot of, you know, the 10th Amendment is delegation of powers, but the fact of the matter is here, it doesn't say what people think it says. And in Cooper versus Aaron in 1958, the Supreme Court of the United States held that federal law prevails over state law due to the operation of the Supremacy Clause, and that federal law can neither be nullified openly directly by state legislators or state executive or judicial officers, nor nullified indirectly by them through evasive schemes. The Supremacy Clause is Article 6, Clause 2 of the Constitution. It seems like a lot of lawmakers it feels like they see the Constitution as a pile of amendments and forget that they have these articles and like the whole operation of the government actually defined in this document.
Right.
Yeah, just people seem to forget that.
They take them as suggestions almost, you know. Well, we suggest that you obey federal law, but then they think they can make their state laws contradict that. And, you know, so that's a whole nother issue separate from the establishing a state religion.
Well, what I find on it, though, these people know this isn't going to go anywhere.
No. Yeah, they do.
But they are posturing. They're spending taxpayer money. They are spending money that the state could do on other things. And the only thing that they are accomplishing is posturing in their little districts for their little elections.
Boatload of time wasting, too.
It is. So if you're in North Carolina, I would very much like to hear from you and sort of get, you know, feet on the ground story. But we're going to move from feet on the ground and discuss other smells.
Yes.
For example, the smell of God.
Mm.
Crystal McVeigh, author of the book Waking Up in Heaven, appeared on Fox and Friends Tuesday talking about her near-death experience. I saw an immense brightness, a brightness I could feel, touch, taste, hear, and smell that infused me. Not like I had 5 senses, but more like I had 500 senses. So she knows what God smells like. As of airtime, she has yet to describe the odor of God in available media.
You know, I can go there because having been a pastor for 20 years, and we were the kind of church that really got into things.
Right.
I mean, I read on my Facebook today, one of my fellow evangelists, or a guy that I used to have all the time, talked about how a great service they had with people passed out on the floors. You know, people had worked up into such a frenzy that they were passing out and this kind of thing. And from that, my experience is God smells a whole lot like sweat and cheap perfume.
That's a lot better than what I thought. I just figured God would smell like bacon. That's the best ever.
I guess I'd have to go obvious and ask what a vacuum smells like. But
very good.
Oh.
Now, I just have noticed something, and, you know, stop me if I'm just going off into strange territory here, but This woman wrote a book about her near-death experience going to heaven, and there was a guy a while back, a neurosurgeon, who wrote a book about going to heaven, and there was a little kid whose parents wrote a book about him going to heaven. You notice you never only hear about this, except for when somebody maybe stands to profit.
Yeah, you only hear about it when there's a mercantile exchange, and in America, you only hear about people going to, you know, nearly dying and hearing about the Christian heaven, which is not what you find in India.
Yeah.
It's weird how regional... Is that how that religion works, that there are certain regions of planet Earth that have different afterworlds?
Yeah, I guess so. You know, maybe if you die in India, you go to whatever the prevailing religion's prevailing belief about afterlife is. How come nobody ever writes a book about going to the Christian hell, by the way?
Yeah,
that was going to be my question. Yeah. You know, nobody goes to hell. Everybody's saved. But, you know, and the very people who want to say, okay, this is evidence of God, but whoa, you'd have to back up and say, no, this is evidence of the Baptist God. Yours doesn't count. You know, I was Baptist when that happened to me.
So McVeigh describes herself as a former doubter who is plagued by skepticism.
I wouldn't call it a plague, exactly. No. I consider skepticism a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's how I keep my money, among other things.
Yes.
You know, I understand the near-death experience. My mother had a near-death experience.
Right.
And she described that to me. It was during a childbirth. The child was stillborn, and it was years later she described it. But understanding how the mind works and understanding that we have debunked this, understanding that we know it's a medical condition that happens.
Right.
You know, understanding that. And just this past week, I saw where they were doing the combination where the MRI and the EEG, and I forget the name of that, but where they can actually read the brain readings without putting the contacts on. They have done some experimenting as people died. And they have found a flourish of brain activity at the moments immediately before, and even some cases after, quote, clinical death. You know, we know what's going on here. And I understand, okay, you had this sensory overload, you think you've smelled God, but in the overall scheme of things, it's meaningless. Mm-hmm. It is something that happened in your mind, and it's like a dream at night. That doesn't really change anything.
Absolutely. And she says she fails to find human words to describe what she experienced while she was standing in heaven. Might I suggest the language of the dolphins or perhaps Klingon?
I like squirrel.
Yeah, squirrel would be good.
Dog.
Speaking in tongues.
I'd pay for that book. Or speaking in tongues.
Yeah, we could just settle Mahanda by a Suzuki. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, I think Sam Harris had probably the best explanation of after the book Proof of Heaven came out, the neurosurgeon. He did a really good, from a neurological perspective, explanation of Dr. Eben Alexander's book about why near-death experiences all have these things in common because they're functions of the natural brain.
Yeah. So we got one more, sort of a variation on the theme, and I want to talk about this one because this one's fairly amazing. Pepperidge Farm remembers the Messiah. Patty Burke, an observant snacker in both the visual and religious sense, recently found a goldfish cracker with deeper implications. It has a circle, an obvious golden crown, and an X-shaped protuberance forming a cross. When I picked this one up, I knew he was special, she said. Something I've never seen before out of all the goldfish I've eaten. After contacting Pepperidge Farm, the maker of the goldfish crackers, Burke claimed that the company called the cracker miraculous and contacted her pastor, D. Scott Worth. I think it's a sign, Worth told WKMG. I think it points to, I would hesitate to call it a miracle, but I think it points to the miracle, which is Jesus Christ defeated death. And that's what Easter is all about. So, wow. Here's the thing. You look at the pictures are available online, and don't look at it and see an impression of a Phillips screwdriver, which is clearly what it is. No,
yes.
It is not from a screwdriver. It's a sign from God that Pepperidge Farm and goldfish crackers in particular are blessed by the Almighty.
You know, I really doubt that Pepperidge Farm told this woman that her goldfish cracker was miraculous.
Yeah.
If I were the manufacturer of many, supposedly uniform crackers in certain shapes, I would probably say it was exceedingly common that they come out with funky protuberances and shapes and impressions and stuff. I love protuberances. So, you know, I would say use your skepticism here, and I think we should try to find out what Pepperidge Farm actually thinks.
Working in tech support, I'm guessing they said, we don't know how it happened, and she heard miraculous, because that happens to me a lot.
I was going to say the same thing. I answer tons of phone calls from crazies.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've handled 30 phone calls, and your first thought is, okay, ma'am, whatever you think it is, that's what it is. Miracle, sure. You got it. Right. Thanks. Get off
UFO,
my phone.
UFO, Bigfoot, yeah. Whatever. Yeah. Okay.
This is another one of those things where maybe they're calling it miraculous, but I think there might be a mercantile intent here, because that one chicken nugget that sold on eBay for like $8,000 because it looks like George Washington. I mean, there's no there. Machines break. I got a wheat thin that was double the size of a normal wheat thin.
It's a miracle.
Yeah. Does that mean that, you know, embryon theory and higher order dimensions exist? No, it means the machine screwed up.
Yeah, well, you know, and the thing is, God is going to do a miracle to show this woman. Now, number one, you got to understand a little bit of the article I read. She eats 4 pounds of these things a week.
Oh, my God.
Wow, okay.
So, you know, you're eating 4 pounds of them and you're examining each one. Imagine...
Four pounds? We're talking thousands of goldfish crackers a week, aren't we?
I mean, probably eaten a Burt Reynolds goldfish cracker and a...
Burt Reynolds naked on a bearskin rug?
Exactly. I mean...
That would be the best goldfish ever.
4 pounds a week. I mean, there's millions of those. So when you kind of look at the story, I mean, if you have to go through how many hundreds of pounds of goldfish to find one that has a little bit different mark, I would say it's extremely high quality control on Pepperidge Farm's part.
That's a fairly good sign.
Yeah, if I were them, I would encourage some of the hype a bit, because you know, the more people are aware of your brand, the more they're going to buy. Like, after hearing this, I kind of do want to go eat some goldfish just because they sound tasty.
Yeah, if I were a bitter marketing exec, I would totally be hitting the 700 Club, you know, Benny Hinn stuff. You know, showing this off, or maybe selling a special version of goldfish crackers.
With the absolutely.
Or goldfish communion.
Oh.
Maybe that's what I would do.
That'd be really great.
Where I would go.
What kind of wine goes best with cheddar cheese goldfish, though? That's my big concern.
I'm going to guess it's wine with a screw off top, just off the top of my head.
I don't know that, you know.
How about
Christian
a box of wine?
Wine seems to go with cheese.
That's true.
Box wine, I don't know. Box wine can be pretty good. So, post show today, 5 p.m., 1111 South 11th Street in Tacoma. It's a bar called 1111. Should be a good time. This is Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam. With me today was Deanna Joy Lyons and Rich Lyons. I'd like to thank Michael Payton, our special guest. My production assistants were Rebecca Friedman, Allison Rose, and Randy Tyson of the Legion of Region podcast. Music is by Shelley Siegel, Chris Coleman, and Phil Whitfield. Ask an Atheist is online at askanatheist.tv. You can leave us a voicemail at 206-420-0997 or email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. See you guys next week.
Clay Radio, your conversation station.
Pyongyang's